Although the following conversation is sponsored by John Hancock, the opinions and legal views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily reflect John Hancock's views on any of the issues discussed. Please listen to the important disclosures at the end of this broadcast.
On this edition of John Hancock's Advanced Markets Radio, John Harrison, Director of Advanced Markets at John Hancock Life Insurance Company, welcomes back Tricia Morrison, COO of the Pangburn Group, to discuss non-qualified benefit plans. I'm Tanya Ittings, and you're listening to John Hancock's Advanced Markets Radio.
Hello, I'd like to welcome all of our JHAM radio listeners to this broadcast of John Hancock Advanced Market Radio. Today we're talking with Tricia Morrison of the Pangburn Group on the topic of end-of-year issues for non-qualified benefit plans. And Tricia, hello. It's a pleasure to participate in this second recording with you. Our first was in August, covering general issues of administration for non-qualified benefit plans. I appreciate your willingness to join us again. I think this will be very informative for our listeners.
Thank you, John. I'm happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Can you share with us an overview of the Pangburn Group and your background?
Sure. The Pangburn Group is a third-party administrator exclusively for non-qualified executive benefit plans. It's all we do, non-qualified plans. We are not in the qualified space, so it is a specialty of ours that allows us to focus very specifically on the rules and regulations governing these plans and the informal funding nuances that may be present as part of these plans. All of our servicing really is broad across the country. We service clients in all 50 states and really handle both corporate clients and have a specialty as well in servicing financial institutions and the administration of their BOLI programs and so forth. We've been in business for almost 20 years now. We're coming up on our 20th anniversary. Have really built a great business with a unique business model and the efficiencies necessary to handle over 2,000 plans that we administer. We are unique in that we have focused on a niche market within this industry, and that's the small to mid-sized privately owned companies. So a lot of administrators out there are part of the sales of the product. They are perhaps looking for larger publicly held clients. We have found a niche in providing a service at a reasonable cost to, you know, plans that may have one participant, up to, say, a couple hundred participants, both private and public, but most of them, of course, tend to be on the private side in the smaller sector. I personally have been with Pangburn for over 12 years and really began with account management and operating these plans and learning the nuances of deferred compensation. And it's been fun to watch this business grow as and really the industry change, both from a regulatory perspective as well as the technology and, you know, online access and all of the things that we have now at our disposal to have information 24/7. And as the retirement industry has evolved, I currently oversee all the operations here at Pangburn and always enjoy working here and working with these great people and advisors and clients that we have. That's a little bit about Pangburn and who we are.
Well, it's impressive that it's been 20 years. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but certainly the reputation that you folks have for these kinds of services is well-deserved. Could you elaborate a bit more about some of the services that Pangburn provides? And if any of our listeners would like to reach out to you and talk about those services for their own cases and how they might best contact you?
Sure. And of course, you know, in our last broadcast, we talked a lot about the complexities of non-qualified plans and the need for administration. And we focused on the rules and regulations, the accounting implications, and so forth. Our role and the services that we provide are intended to solve these issues and provide guidance and assistance to these companies and financial institutions who sponsor these types of plans. We begin with plan design consultation, and our consulting really lasts throughout the entire lifespan of a plan. But, of course, to start a plan, you have to design the plan and determine what features are applicable to meet the needs and the goals and objectives of the plan or the business problem they're trying to solve with this plan. So we have consultants here who help the clients go through and determine what are those best practices that they want to follow or what design features, be it distributions or how the plan is structured, is best for their company. We pride ourselves, because of the number of plans that we see and the market that we service, on having a lot of experience on what are best practices. And we see a lot of plans be very successful, and we've been fortunate to help clients, you know, fix plans that have been broken in the past. And so we've learned a lot from that, and we feel we have a great staff of people here that can help share in that. All of that consultation usually will result in our assisting the clients with the plan documentation and everything that they need to implement the plan, both from a documentary perspective as well as educating their clients or the staff, payroll, accounting, et cetera, as to how to operate this plan on their end. A lot of the focus of our servicing, of course, is around compliance, but also in accounting. We provide for both plan liabilities as well as for plan assets in the corporate-owned life insurance policies or bank-owned life insurance policies. We provide GAAP accounting reports every quarter. We provide for plans that allow for daily valuation. We provide online access to view balances 24/7 online, both for the plan sponsor and for the participants. We are able to provide assistance to the advisor as well. Generally, the advisor brings us the prospect, and we work in conjunction with the advisor to assist the client. So we do what we can as well to assist the advisor, particularly as it relates to monitoring the asset and liability and keeping them intact so that the company's financials remain within their expectations. Then, of course, finally, we do a lot of assistance with ongoing compliance. You know, there are issues that clients face annually, which we'll talk about probably a little more, 101J reporting requirements, FICA requirements, 409A, ensuring your plan is in compliance. We're constantly monitoring these things for our clients and being proactive in assisting them with ensuring that their plan is operating appropriately. I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that our focus is specifically non-qualified plans. That term can be pretty broad. So all of the services that I've described really can apply in part or mostly to all the plan designs we handle, which include defined benefit plans, defined contribution plans, stock appreciation plans, phantom stock plans, and of course, split dollar also has an element here if that's utilized as part of the informal funding program. As far as contacting us, we have a great website that has a plethora of information available to plan sponsors and advisors, from tax information to compliance and regulatory information to sample reports, all of our contact information. So I'd certainly encourage everyone to access our website at pengburngroup.com, where they can get more information about us and our processes.
Yeah, I think just listening to you go through the litany of the services that you can provide, it points out how many things there are for producers to worry about when they implement these plans. A lot of details have to be covered. And if they're not covered properly, then things can go wrong, and that can lead to serious problems down the road. So it's really smart to work with a TPA such as the Pangburn Group, who can really handle these issues for them and help their client make sure that they're always in compliance. Curious, how does the Pangburn Group get paid for its services?
Well, the Pangburn Group, as I mentioned earlier, we have a unique business model. We're not part of the sales process. We don't do sales and marketing of life insurance products and so forth. So our business model is that of a fee-for-service model. We bill our clients directly on a per-participant or per-policy basis, generally on an annual basis. We do have a one-time setup fee that covers implementing the plan on our platform, assisting with plan design consultation and documentation and so forth. But the key here, and one of the things that I think has distinguished us in many ways, has been the fact that we are fee-for-service, and we are not in any way sharing in any of the commissions from the products.
And one of the nice things about the fee-for-service approach is that fee that the employer pays for those services is tax deductible as well. So that's another added feature in addition to not going on the policies for commission splits. When it comes to non-qualified benefit plans, what is it about the end of the year that is so important?
Well, of course, as we near the end of the year, there's several factors that come into play that plan sponsors and advisors as well need to be cognizant of. Certainly, without exception, we have deferral elections each year, okay? And those elections in a plan that allows employees to defer, or even in a defined contribution SERP, where maybe the employee has the option to make time and form of payment elections, as we near the end of the year, there are very strict deadlines on when those elections must be completed. As you probably know, by 12/31, all elections for the upcoming calendar year become irrevocable. So usually around October, November, we're looking at the end of the year to have plan sponsors prepare for and be ready to collect those elections. It's important for plan sponsors to ensure their enrollments are handled timely and that participants have been well communicated the parameters of enrollment and the expectations of enrollment. Oftentimes, there's an opportunity for new participants to join, so that enhances the communications requirement as well.
Sure.
There are payroll implications as well, which factor into maybe some tax issues. Any plan that utilizes a split dollar arrangement, you know, there's reportable income that has to be included on the W-2. So that's going to be a factor for payroll groups as they look to W-2s at the end of the year. Similar to that is FICA. You know, there's a FICA obligation in a non-qualified plan. So those are elements that have to be added to the W-2 and adjusted near year end. So payrolls are working to ensure that they have the information calculated and ready to include before the end of the year. And of course, for many clients who have a 12/31 fiscal year end, there's also 101J requirements and notice requirements to the IRS for life insurance policies. I guess another reason that the end of the year becomes so important is many companies are looking into the next year and they're thinking of budgeting and planning. Well, there's many things about the non-qualified plan that need to be taken into account. You know, are distributions upcoming? Have you paid all distributions that needed to be paid in this year? It's likely there will be auditors coming in near the end of the year that are going to be viewing your accounting. Has that all been properly accrued on the books? Have terminated participants been reconciled in the plan and so forth? So there's a lot of auditing going on, which requires plan sponsors to be prepared for that and to view their non-qualified plan records to ensure they are up to date. Probably one other opportunity for companies is to really be looking ahead to the opportunity to re-defer a lot of in-service payments are due in January. So there may be opportunities not only for distributions upcoming, but the deadline for participants to re-defer their time and form of payment could possibly be coming up at 12/31. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
So lots of things around the whole deferral election issues. What are the rules around making those elections for deferrals as it pertains to a brand new plan just being implemented compared to a plan that's been in existence perhaps for a year or longer?
Well, that's a great question. You know, there are certainly rules, and the general rule is that an election has to be made by no later than December 31st prior to the year in which amounts are earned. But there is certainly an exception when a new plan is established or new participants who've never been eligible before or asked to join the plan. Basically, they have 30 days from the date they become eligible to complete all the proper enrollment forms to join the plan. It's very often at this time of the year that we have advisors and clients who are rushing to implement the plan, either because participants feel they have to enroll by 12/31, or they're trying to get their elections in so they can elect to defer their bonus before the end of the year. Those tend to be misconceptions at times because, again, that 30-day window has no relevance to December 31st if it's the first time a participant is eligible for the plan and they're not a part of any other like plans. So rushing to get new enrollees in by 12/31 may not be necessary because they could enroll, you know, in the month of January for 30 days or February or so forth. But I want to spend a little time talking about the bonus election because it's very common for people to come at the end of the year and want to defer their bonus that's going to be paid in January or February next year, when in fact the rules require that an election to defer bonus be made prior to when that bonus is earned. So using a simple example of a calendar year bonus that's earned from January 1st through December 31st and paid in the first quarter of the next year, to enroll in November or December of 2015 for the amounts earned 15 paid early 2016 is really too late. You could perhaps defer a pro rata portion of it, but if you're enrolling in December, you're only deferring approximately 1/12 of that bonus. And a lot of times it's not worth the rush of getting the plan in by the end of the year to do that. So one of the first comments I make to people is ensuring they understand how the bonus deferral elections work, because it's more than likely that that bonus in the early part of next year has already been earned and therefore it's too late to defer that bonus.
They should have made that election in late 2014 for the 2015 bonus.
That's right. So basically what they're looking at is starting their election in December 2015 for the amounts earned in 16, paid in 17.
Well, you mentioned 101J also. I expect that there are some tasks that have to be completed in relationship to that. What do you see?
Yes, certainly. You know, although it may not be applicable to every client, because the reporting for 101J is on the client's taxable year or when they complete their corporate tax return, most companies do have a 1231 tax year end. So that does generally become applicable for a lot of our clients. And 101J, of course, became a requirement in 2006 when the COLI Best Practices Act was enacted. And basically that requires both consent when the policy application is completed by the employee that, you know, their understanding that they are insured under a policy owned by the company. But the secondary requirement to 101J, besides the consent, is an annual notice to the IRS. And that notice is using Form 8925. That form needs to be completed and, as I mentioned, included with the corporate tax return each year. The form basically is going to require that you notify the service of the total number of employees employed and the total number of employees on which a life insurance policy is owned by the company. This requirement, it is important to consider when your policies were issued, because this requirement only applies to policies that are issued on or after August 17, 2006, or policies that have been materially modified after that date. So by doing this, you basically comply with 101J, and the ramifications of not doing so could require that proceeds over the cost basis are subject to income tax. And generally with life insurance, we're trying to avoid income tax on the death proceeds. So a very important consideration.
Absolutely. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of lack of information in the field about the ramifications of Section 101J. So I'm glad that we were able to touch upon that here as well today. You mentioned split dollar. Is imputed income for split dollar, is that an end of year concern?
For the most part, yes. Definitely an element of year end. We assist all of our clients in calculating the amount that needs to be included on the W-2 for the economic benefit of having that split dollar. Of course, that amount, because it's going on the W-2 and is reportable for our tax purposes, has to be included and withheld before the end of the tax year. So most companies are looking for that number as early as administratively feasible so that they can run that through their payroll before the end of the year. There are certain considerations as part of that calculation, but absolutely have to get in during each taxable year in which there is a split dollar arrangement.
Not only is timing important for that, but we also get a lot of questions about how the calculation is actually made. For example, what amount of death benefit to use? Is it beginning of year, end of year, mid-year? Is there something that you folks typically use for that?
Yes. Largely is going to depend upon the arrangement and what portion of the death proceeds the employee is entitled to and how that is calculated. If the employee is entitled to a specified amount or a percentage of some number that's not going to change, that number could technically be calculated at any time during the year because, of course, it's based on the rate divided by a multiple of 1,000 and multiplied by the current term rate. You know, it's usually a carrier term rate or the IRS 2001 table. But most of our clients, we try to calculate as early as possible if that number is not going to change. Now, the variable very oftentimes is, in fact, a variable because it's based on maybe the cash value or there's some factor that's going to change during the course of the year to impact what portion of the death proceeds the employee is due. So as a result of that, we strive to either calculate the benefit as close to 1231 as possible, or in some limited exceptions, companies will choose to make the calculation on the policy anniversary date, which is allowed, which could be at any time during the year. But certainly most companies utilize the end of the year. So we try to use a value as close to December 31st as administratively feasible. If, for instance, you know on October 1st that no more premiums are going to go into the policy, and so the only difference between October 1st and December 31st is earnings during that period, it's more than likely fine to do the calculation as of that date under the presumption that there's not going to be a material change to the value of the factors being used to calculate that amount.
I understand. That's good. Thank you. Another common question that we receive concerns Social Security deductions are applied to non-qualified plans. How do you typically address that?
Probably one of the most misunderstood and overlooked aspects of administration that we find on in the course of working with new clients.
I'm not surprised.
In fact, a lot of the plans we take over, we find that clients haven't properly reported FICA or didn't even realize that they needed to report FICA. We provide a report on an annual basis to assist our clients with this. We do a lot of education on the implementation phase of our onboarding where we discuss how to report FICA. We talk to payroll. There are a couple of different methodologies that you can utilize as to the timing of reporting FICA. We help them weigh the pros and cons of that, and of course, they'll discuss with their tax advisors, and based on the methodology they utilize, we will then report on an annual basis. Generally speaking, though, what's an important takeaway as to how FICA works on non-qualified plans in general, because it can be complex, is that with employee deferrals, all amounts are to be taken into account for FICA purposes as they are vested. And because employee money is fully vested at all times, as the amounts are deferred, they should be taken into account. By doing so, you avoid taxation on any earnings on those employee deferrals. So employee deferrals should be FICA taxed as they are deferred. Employer contributions to a plan